Hello, and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle. With me, your host, Joshua Smith. Hope everyone is having a wonderful Sunday evening. I know football is getting ready to start coming. Oh, I guess football's just starting now. Now that I live in the middle of the country, I forget the time zone thing. I know that you guys are just getting the Sunday night game on the West Coast now. So, but I hope you guys have had a great weekend or are getting ready for a good week. I got an awesome show for you guys, and I'm very excited for this one. Let's start off with sponsors. Of course, we have TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great Epstein Didn't Kill Himself hoodie that you see me wearing tonight by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you can join the Patreon, subscribe star, or become a member of the YouTube channel under all my videos. Get yourself into a private Discord server where you can get all of Top Lops' new gear up to 2 weeks before it goes to the general public at like a 30% discount. Really, really is awesome stuff. Definitely some cool perks there too if you sign up on the Patreon. And of course, you know, if you do a lot of the live shows, joining on YouTube gets you into the exclusive members only streams after the show. Plus, you get all the cool hand drawn emojis that Top Lobster puts out for the live chats. And you guys will be the only kings and queens with those things. And of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you own a business or you're thinking about owning a business or you have friends that own a business or family members that own a business, check them out. It's free. It's free to check it out. You know what I mean? Can't hurt to see what they can do for you. So check them out. I promise you, you're going to enjoy them. I have some other listeners and viewers that are working with them now, and they're doing a great job, man. Seriously, so go check them out. Guys, as you know, I was removed from Twitter last week. Thankfully, I'm two steps ahead of Jack Dorsey and started a backup account 7 months ago. You can find that at @BreakJoshua if you want to follow me on my new account. But yeah, 5 years of Twitter involvement down the drain, 20,000 followers gone. Pretty sad. I think I'm at like 3,200 now or something on the new account. So thankfully, I got some great friends out there who are looking out for me and help me kind of build up a platform on my backup Twitter. So you guys can go over there and check me out. What's up, Faith, Liberty, and Praxis? How you doing? Thanks for calling me a king. I always enjoy that. Guys, we got a great show for you tonight. I was just on his show recently, Year Zero. He's part of the Libertarian Institute as a writer, and of course his podcast on there. He is Mr. Tommy Sammons. Sure, how are you doing?
What's going on, dude?
What's up, man? How you been?
I've been, man. It's gotten crazy since the last time I talked to you.
Yeah, dude. I bet. But you know, what are you gonna do? You know, it's wild, man. It's wild. It's wild outside of the Liberty echo chamber, and it's also wild inside the Liberty echo chamber too, man. It's been one hell of a ride for sure. But let's talk about you first, man. I want to know your journey. I listened to you, I checked you out. We've been talking on Twitter for quite some time. I've been on your show. It was great. I had a lot of fun on your show. It was really kickback and chill. But I want to know more about the man. So what brought you to these great ideas of liberty, brother?
Well, I think it started with, I think it started with my divorce. Honestly, you know, one of the things I say is the fastest way to radicalize a father is to put him through family courts.
Oh, dude, no doubt. And,
There was a moment, I was probably like 23 years old, 22 years old. I had just gotten out of the military. And it was during the recession when Bush first took office. So it was officially called the Clinton recession there in like 2003. And I couldn't find a job. I'd been looking for a job for like 8 months. I couldn't find a job. And I'm sitting there in the DA's office with my ex-wife sitting across from me, and the DA looks at her and asks, like, okay, he hasn't been paying child support for the last 8 months. Do you want to put him in jail or not? And I was like, why the hell does she have the power to choose this? She doesn't like me. Apparently we're divorced now, you know? And, fortunately for me, I had been paying child support for probably about 5 months at that time, because they're so behind on everything. True. And so she was like, no, he's been paying, and you know, he's working on getting caught up. So, you know, let it be. So I didn't go to jail over it, but yeah, it was kind of there that I realized, like, oh, these people aren't my friends. Yeah. Like, right. it doesn't matter. And from there, I discovered Glenn Beck. I was never really political, but I discovered Glenn Beck at that point and started listening to his radio show, because I was driving a truck at the time. So I could listen to a lot of talk radio.
Right.
So Michael Berry, Glenn Beck, and you know, these kinds types of people, Joe Pagliano, or however you say his name, they're in Houston, a local Houston show. So I was listening to them. And started watching Glenn Beck on Fox News. And so I think the first time I ever heard the term libertarian was from Glenn Beck. And I was just like, okay, I guess that's what I am.
Sure.
And then you had the entire Ron Paul thing happen. And Glenn Beck was bad mouthing Ron Paul. So, well, I'm a Beckian libertarian. So yeah, screw this guy. So I never really... I didn't really get involved in the Ron Paul movement. It was always kind of a peripheral, like, kind of thing for me. I was more focused on raising my kids, making the money I had to make to pay my child support, and those things. So the politics was all peripheral for me. It wasn't really in my right there at the forefront of my mind.
Sure.
And when 2015 rolled around, I was supporting Ted Cruz, and I got a tweet from a guy named Austin Peterson.
Oh,
somebody,
yeah.
I'm sure somebody's heard of the guy.
Yeah, a few of us.
Apparently he was running for president.
Yeah.
And he told me about it, and I was like, and he's like, can I call you? And I was like, yeah, you can call me. Here's my number. So he called me, and we spent like an hour on the phone. And he turned me on to Tom Woods and things like that.
Sure.
And so I started like looking into that, and I was like, wait a second, this libertarian thing, this is a lot more detailed than I thought it was. So I just, like I said, I'm a truck driver. I spent 10, 11 hours a day listening to audiobooks and listening to podcasts. And now I'm some kind of weird, you know, conglomerate of an agorist and market anarchist and whatever.
Like, sure. Yeah, absolutely, man. I get it, dude. And it's funny, because, you know, I work with the Libertarian Party. You know that. Everybody watching my show knows that. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I sit on the Libertarian National Committee, but I'm so utterly fucking blackpilled on the National Committee right now. It's just an absolute mess, dude. It's been, you know, it's been such a fight for me for over five years now.
Right.
You know, I traveled to 40 states. I really worked with the Mises Caucus heavily. You know, when I got with the Mises Caucus, there was like 55 people in a Facebook group. And then I worked my ass off to help grow the Mises Caucus. And it, like, you know, the party has changed, but it's still like it's like that, you know, when you get to the final boss, you know, on a video game. And it's like now we got to deal with this LNC still, like, it, and it's like the rest of the party's changing and the LNC is not changing. And it's so blackpilling to me, who's, you know, been 4 years almost on the committee now, campaigning to run for chair twice, traveling to 40 states. It's really, really hard. And in fact, we have our next LNC meeting in Boston, the weekend of December 4th. And I'm like, I'm literally weighing my options on not going. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm so fucking blackpilled on these horrendous people that I don't even want to work with the LNC. Plus, I think Boston has vax passports at all their businesses and shit. So it's like, I don't even know if I can get into the fucking hotel. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'd fly there and just be stuck outside. And like, I don't, you know, I could go hang out with Toad because that's probably where, or, you know, some of my people out there. And that'd be cool, you know, but why leave my family and spend $600 if I can't even go and be a part of the LNC meeting that I'm going for, you know? And, but yeah, I've kind of coming to this conclusion that I don't even want to be involved in politics anymore. You know what I mean? And it's a weird thing because I've spent, it's been 13 years I've been working in politics, 14 years I've been working in politics now. Cause I worked on the Ron Paul campaign in 2008. And that's really where I cut my teeth and got into politics. I was jaded on the two-party system already prior to that. You know, I'd fought a war, all that shit. We talked about that on your show. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a black-pilling thing, politics. It's just like, it feels like a futile exercise all the time, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. It was like around the end of 2019. I was just like, wait a second. Like this isn't going to work. I started, I joined the LP in 2017, and I looked at what was going on and I was just like, I don't want to be a part of this.
What a rough time.
And then, so I just kind of backed out of it. And then in 2018, I started my show and I joined him again. And then I was like, what am I doing? I'm wasting money. I'm wasting time. I'm a truck driver.
Sure.
And I was over the road at the time. I'm not over the road anymore, but I was over the road at the time. And I was like, I don't have time to do anything with these people. So why am I even joining them? And so again, I just kind of let it go and just ignored it. And then 2019, I joined again. And at the end of 2019, I was just like, this is a lost cause. Like, I just, there's nothing here for me. These people aren't for me. You know, I even left the Mises Caucus group at one time. I did rejoin. When I first joined, it was probably similar, like close to the time you joined the first time. But see, I was still trying to figure out what libertarianism was.
Sure.
So I was going into it. I was reading Rothbard, but I was asking questions that were coming from a statist kind of point of view. Sure. And
you'll get some backlash in there, dude.
Yeah. They're like, do you realize where you're at? And I'm like, dude, I'm asking questions. I'm just trying to figure shit out, you know? And they didn't like that. So I just left the group. I was like, well, this is a problem with libertarians. You're like, we can't have a conversation. And instead of like having a conversation with me, you just want to like scold me and tell me how stupid I am. So I learned as much as I needed to know to tell them how stupid they were. So I rejoined the Mises Caucus group. And I think when I joined the second time, you were in the middle of your run for chair.
Either the first or second time, depending on what year it was. Yeah. Cause I have my first run. I really started my first run in 2017 and then I ran through 2018 and I lost to Nicholas fucking Sickwork. And then, I got creamed in that election, dude. I mean, I think I got 23% of the vote or something like that. And he had like 60 on the first ballot. You just smoked me. And I got it. Like, I'm just a blue collar guy like you, dude. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what I am. I'm a blue collar working class father of seven. You know what I mean? Like, I work my ass off, but I saw some utility in trying to create like a strong libertarian party in the country. Cause that's what I think, you know, I think if we're ever going to get out of the two party system, which I hate, you know, and obviously I like one party a little bit better than I like the other party. I'm not so naive to think that both parties are exactly the same. Like a lot of libertarians, like I know that if I live in a red state, I'm going to be much happier than if I live in a blue state because I have more liberty. I can homeschool our kids. Now I probably can't, like I'm in Iowa. I'm not supposed to smoke pot, right? Like it's illegal to smoke pot here, But I'd rather smoke a legal pot than go to the store and pay, you know, the markup for it anyways, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, and so it's pretty crazy. Yeah, guys, sorry for the Sunday night show. Tommy and I were going to do, what was it, Friday, and then I got my my camera crapped out on me, so I had to take it in and get it worked on, and so we're good now. But yeah, you know, I think I ran the second time I started that run, like at the end of 2018, maybe 2019. I was like, oh, I'm going to do this again. You know, I'd been on the board for 2 years. I had put in some time actually in the national leadership, and then I lost by like 100 votes at the national convention in Orlando. But there's some speculation as to you know, if that was a legit election or not. They did half the election online and half the election in person. And if you were there, you know, like we had the room. I mean, there's no doubt. And, you know, the majority of people were there, and we had the room. It wasn't even close. And that was kind of the beginning of me getting really kind of black-pilled on it. I was like, I think these motherfuckers actually stole this election from me, you know? Like, but I never pushed it. Like, I never really pushed for an audit or any of that kind of shit. I didn't want to be the guy that's like, oh, you stole the election. You know, I didn't want to be that guy. You know, nobody wants to be that fucking guy. You know what I mean?
Right,
and so I just kind of let it go. I got my at-large seat back, and man, this LNC body has just devolved into absolute shit. Terrible. What's up, Nate and Dowie? Thanks for the $5 super chat. He said, I quit listening to Stapleton's podcast and started listening to your show. No ill will to Jason, but I have no time for bitter people. Damn, dude. Scathing. So no, that's funny. I used to be a really big Jason Stapleton fan. In fact, when I first got involved with the party, Jason's probably one of the reasons why I actually ran for national chairman in 2017. Mm-hmm. You know, and watching him, I mean, I had never watched anybody just destroy fucking Nicholas Sarwark like I watched Jason's. I mean, it was like awkward and cringe to watch. It was so bad. He destroyed Nick Sarwark on his show so absolutely, utterly, terribly. And this was back when, you know, Jason was still considered himself a libertarian politics kind of guy. And he just absolutely tore into Nick, and it was like, yeah, you know, this isn't the kind of people that should be leading the party. And so I got involved. But now, you know, he's kind of gotten involved with this post-libertarian, or I wouldn't call him a Praxian like Andrew and Buck and Pete, but he's kind of that post-libertarian, like, fuck all this shit, get wealth, you know, only care about yourself. That's how you're going to make everything better. But I mean, I'm cool with that. Like, I think that's a good thing, to amass your wealth and create a better community for yourself you know, a better life for your family, but you don't gotta be a dick to everybody about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's not ever going to convince people to do what you want them to do. You know, there was a time in my life when I trolled, online to get people onto my side, and it works sometimes, but being just an absolute asshole to people isn't going to change their mind. But what's your take on this post-libertarian split, man? I've seen you caught up in a couple of conversations online about it. What do you see happening?
My main thing is with young libertarians.
Sure.
Like, this is kind of where I kind of like draw my line in the sand is like, If you're 20, 24, 25, 26 years old, what life experience do you have to go beyond philosophy or theory? You don't have the ability to tell me what has worked and what hasn't worked. When it comes to like the Reed and Adam Patrick, which I did a show with both of them together, which turned out well.
True.
I mean, you know, like those types of arguments, I think a lot of times what you're running into is people are talking past each other.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And they're not understanding what each other's point is. Like, if you know Adam at all, you would know, like, he doesn't even consider himself a libertarian, really.
True.
He considers himself an anarch, not an anarchist, an anarch, right? So what he's trying to do, and it's one of the messages I put out there, is he's trying to make himself immune to government tyranny, right?
Right.
Well, okay. So one of the things I say a lot is you can't help take care of others until you take care of yourself.
Sure.
And, like, period. And I learned that the hard way. You know, I went through a time where I was barely scraping by and barely making bills. And I had people living with me that I was taking care of. You know, I was that typical Southerner you hear that would give the shirt off his back, sure, you know, kind of guy. And so I realized that giving the shirt off my back isn't doing me any good, because now, like, tomorrow I'm freezing to death and I don't have the ability to help anybody else.
Right.
So you have to figure out, you have to get to a point where you can help yourself before you can help others. I think what's happening in a lot of places is we're all in different areas. We're all in different regions. I was having this conversation with Dave Casey the other day. I was like, look, man, you live in Delaware, and, you know, I know that you're doing everything you can to get shit lined out.
Right.
But I'm in Texas, man. I look at the Libertarian Party in Texas and there are a bunch of Archie Flowers down here.
Yeah.
I don't have time to mess with these people. I have family that depends on me. I can't be dropping everything and going to Austin or Houston or, you know, San Antonio for these meetings so I can argue with a bunch of people that don't want to hear my point of view anyway. Right. So I think what we're running into in a lot of places is the effects of decentralization, which libertarians advocate, but they don't understand how this decentralized locales create different cultural environments for everybody that's involved.
Yeah. It really kind of depends. Yeah. It really depends on where you live, for sure.
Right. So they're trying to paint with a broad brush. Right. We got to do this. Well, maybe you have to do that in New Jersey, but I doubt that's going to work in North Dakota.
Right.
I doubt it's necessary, you know? And so nobody's looking at that aspect of it. And they want to preach Rothbard to a bunch of guys that have already read Rothbard.
Right.
You know, like, it's like, okay, yeah, you're quoting Rothbard. All right. We know Rothbard, but what we're saying is the Rothbard philosophy is not working in this area for whatever reason. It doesn't take it. People don't want to hear it. Okay. So we have to find different strategies. So you have like a Tho Bishop who's making headway in Florida using the Republican Party. Okay. Why is that bad? Is the point, like, Adam asks this a lot, you know, and I talk to Adam a lot. This is why I'm using him as an example. Is the point liberty for more people or power for yourself?
Right.
And if the point's power for yourself, then yeah, go ahead and push a Libertarian Party down everybody's throat. But if the point is liberty for more people, we have to look and we have to strategize as to what that liberty looks like and how to achieve that liberty in different areas.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely and regardless of how you feel about him, I know some people love him, some people hate him, but Adam Kokesh, when he talked about localization, he kind of wrote about it, and it really makes a lot of sense, dude. Just trying to get the government down to the lowest level possible in every area that you can. I mean, really, you know, to get that done, it's going to take different things all over the country because there are different cultures everywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
I came to Iowa from the Bay Area, California, right outside of San Francisco, man.
Talking about culture shock. Yeah,
it's a fucking culture shock. It's a, you know, with the weather, the people, the food, the things people care about here, the pace of life. I mean, everything is just so much different. Everything. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Everything. And it's like, you know, if I had, you know, nobody here wants me to bring my fucking California politics over here. Yeah. You know what I mean? They don't give a shit. They want to make sure that their, you know, their farms are okay and, you know, they can grow corn and
they're the nicest fucking people in the world.
The Midwest, Midwest people are literally like angels, man. They are so sweet. They're absolute sweethearts. I don't know that I've met any like legit assholes, and I've been here almost 2 years now. I haven't met, like, I'm sure they're out there, you know, but I haven't met any.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone I met, people right off the street are just so fucking friendly. Where I'm from in California, man, and I tell this, you know, I'm from Oakland, right outside of Oakland. If you're walking down the street, dude, and people say, hey, they wave at you, you fucking take off. Like, you don't, you know what I mean? You don't sit there and go, oh, hey, how's it going? Because chances are they're going to try to scam you or they're going to rob you. I mean, that's really, yeah. You know what I mean? You don't stop and talk to fucking people on the street. Here, it's like you pet every dog. You say hi to everybody who walks by. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different... It's a whole different way of life, man. And so, like, if I had brought my California politics, like, hey, we got to fight this and we got to fight this. And they don't give a shit about the same things that we do there, you know?
They would have looked at you like you were crazy. I remember when I was doing one of my training courses for driving in Indiana. And I went to get dinner the first night, and I walk in and I'm looking and I'm like, okay, so I'm going to order the chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes and gravy. You know, that's a safe bet pretty much anywhere you are in the country. And they're like, what would you like to drink with that? I was like, I want a sweet tea. And they're like, what the fuck is a sweet tea?
I'm sorry. I missed the beginning. Where were you?
I was in Indiana.
Oh, dude, they don't do sweet tea in Indiana, really?
Well, it might have been where I was. But they looked at me like I was crazy. They were like, well, we have brisk in the cooler. I was like, no, I want homebrewed sweet tea.
Real sweet
like,
tea, yeah.
Yeah, I'm from the South, man.
Like, yeah, I got really lucky with that, dude. My my great-grandmother, you know, I have Southern and Midwestern blood. You know, even though I grew up in California, my great-grandmother, they were from my great-grandparents, they were from Oklahoma and the South. And so they always had like big ass like jars in the backyard.
Sun tea brewing.
And then two cups of sugar per, you know what I mean, like absolute, like the sweetest sweet tea ever.
And did they do mint?
No, it was just straight up sun tea and sugar, man.
My dad used to make his sun tea. He would put fresh mint leaves in it. Oof. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, that'd be really good. I do like fresh mint, but yeah, I mean, they were, you know, they had that Southern sweet tea. I mean, there was always every Thanksgiving and Christmas and everything we ever did, any kind of family, anything. My grandmother too, because she carried it down as a tradition. It was just always like very, very, very sweet tea, man. Like good,
right.
That's the best stuff, you know.
Right.
But some people don't like it, and in California, it's not a thing. Like people don't drink sweet; they drink unsweetened tea everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And like, why? It's like it tastes like fucking bitter water. I mean, that's really what it tastes like, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
It's like might as well just chew coffee grounds.
Yeah. No shit. So you're a truck driver.
Yeah, I'm not over the road anymore. I do work local now. It was a long, long path to get to working local, but sure. I'm doing it. And actually, I'm making more money working local, believe it or not.
I've heard that from a few people recently, dude.
It's, man, they're killing us. Yeah. The government regulations and subsidies for the trucking industry is just destroying the industry, man.
They want to destroy it because they want to get to the place where they can use automated deliveries, man.
Yeah,
that's what they want.
It's shitty. Well, and it worked out for me, man. I'm not mad. You know, my wife moved here from South Africa to be with me. So,
oh, your wife's from South Africa? I know. I followed her on Twitter for a while, but I didn't know she was from South Africa. That's pretty cool.
Yes, she is from South Africa. Nice. And yeah, you followed her on Twitter for like a week whenever she first started her Twitter account, and then she got nuked because she jokingly threatened to take Pete's life because he was talking shit about Kurt Cobain. So she was like, I will kill you. And so they nuked her and she couldn't get her account back, but she does have a new account now. Nice. Yeah. But, so she's from South Africa. And so she moved here and then I was gone all the time. And so she was alone.
Right.
And she's like, I didn't move all the way to fucking America I didn't move 9,000 miles to be alone.
Right.
So it works out for me. Like I'm perfectly happy with my life, you know, and you know, with these OSHA mandates and everything, we've been preparing for years for the possibility that I wouldn't be driving. True. So we've been, you know, raising chickens and growing food and expanding her business and doing the things we have to do to get by. So we're pretty much situated to a position to where like we're almost ready for me to be home full time.
That's cool, man. That's a great way. That's something that we're trying to do too. You know, trying to dip our toes into everything we can. And, you know, I'm talking about getting my insurance sales license so that I don't have to work for anybody really. Talking about doing a real estate license for my fiance, and, you know, kind of building up what we can and trying to, you know, find some other avenues so we don't have to deal with the fucking vaccine shit. And, you know, and really it's smart, man. Everyone should be trying to do that right now. Everybody, anything you can get into, you should be doing it. It's really, like, from what I understand, it's really easy to get your insurance license, and you could sell life insurance, and you can get hot leads and not even have to, like, do any cold calling or anything like that. You know what I mean? And you can make a ton of money. So, it really is. It's, you know, there's no better time than to figure out what you really want to do with your life than right now, because.
Well, and this is kind of like part of the post-libertarian thing, really, if you think about it. True. Like, if you go back and you read How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, Harry Brown's telling you to go out and be an entrepreneur and make more money, right? And you go listen to Tom Woods, and he advertises Skillshare.com, right?
Right.
When Matt Erickson came out and said, stop being poor, everybody freaked out. But that's what he's saying. He's like, just do something for yourself. Like figure it out, you know, and you're going to have to start your own covenant communities, and you're going to have to do it. In some places you might have to be sly about it. You might have to be slick about it. You might be living around a bunch of hippies who are technically socialists that are growing their own food and raising their own chickens, and you can just start, you know, communicating with them. Don't talk ideology with them. Sure. Just talk about trade. Learning how to trade and growing food and raising chickens and stuff like that. It's not that hard. And, you know, I was lucky. I grew up, even when we were in Dallas, we were in apartments. We lived in government housing for a while when I was real young.
Me too.
And my dad always grew tomatoes. So that was always there. There was always that you can produce your own food. That was always in my mind. And so whenever I bought this property and I moved out here, I built a greenhouse. I built chicken coops. I was like, I just started doing stuff because it was like, all right, we got to do something. And when I had Aaron, from Timeline on Earth on the other day, I was like, dude, I've been paranoid for like the last 15 years. And he's like, you're vindicated. And I'm like, yeah, finally. Hi, kids. Do you like
violence? Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
You know, but the thing is that I started looking long time ago at, and not from a prepper position, but just from a survivalist position. My grandpa always told me, like, the best thing you could ever do is be a jack of all trades, because you can always have a place to go. You always have a way to survive. And I just always remembered that. He had this guy that he used to own a dump truck that he would use to haul dirt in for him. But this guy, he would come in and do electrical work. He would come do this, that, and the other. And I just remember my grandpa always talking like, this guy's a survivor. He's a survivor. That's the kind of person you want to be, because you never know when it's going to go bad.
Right.
You never know when shit's going to really hit the fan. And so that's kind of when, like, my podcast has taken a lot of journeys over the last couple of years. And lately that's all I've been talking about is like, what can you do? Like, what are we capable of doing on our own to figure this out? And it's not talking philosophy. It's not talking theory, as fun as that is. I mean, I enjoy it just as much as the next guy, honestly. But like, this is you got to get a sense of urgency about yourself.
this is bad, man. like this is bad.
That's an understatement.
They're making it to where if you don't have a vaccine passport or you're not willing to pay big pharma weekly to get tested, you're basically being forced to subsidize big pharma to get tested. This is cronyism at its worst.
Oh, sure.
And you have to do this to work. How long before you have to do this to bank? How long before you have to do this to shop? How long before you have to do this to, you know, have insurance? Like this spot, right?
Right.
So you have to be prepared for the worst. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. It sounds, obviously, I told you, I've been paranoid for 15 years, but.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
But at the same time, this is reality now. This is real life. This is right in our face. And we're like, okay, I'm living in a dystopian novel.
Right.
Now what? You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Medic Knight, thanks for the $5 super chat, man. He said, Josh, do you and Tommy think libertarians can win any congressional seats in 2022 midterm? Seems like the Democrats are super doomed next year. I'm going to be completely honest with you. Absolutely not. We might get better vote totals in some congressional races, but it would be a pipe dream to think that we're going to win any congressional seats in 2022. Unfortunately, it's the party doesn't have any resources, dude. I mean, this national party has been running on like $1.7 million budget per year for like the last decade. Like there's no resources for congressional candidates as a libertarian. There's no resources for Senate candidates. I mean, you can go out and run your own race and you can raise your own money. But you won't get any help from the national party, really. I mean, you might if there's any candidate support fund money at all, it's, you know, few and far between. You know, a couple of candidates that are doing really well might get a $5,000 donation from the national party if it's possible. But it's just it's really hard as libertarian national committee to run on what the little resources they have. And then the little resources they do have, you know, there's a lot of overhead for employees and staffers, and then the ballot access fight just never stops. I mean, it's, you know, we have to fight like in 13 states. We have to go to court like every two years to just get an L on the ballot next to your name, man. So no, I don't think we'll win any congressional seats. We may get close, and we may have some really big, you know, victories as far as the Libertarian Party is concerned when it comes to, you know, the numbers we put up, but it's still going to be a while, man, till we start taking federal seats. That's why I've been so impressed with the Mises Caucus over the last several years, is because they focus locally and they've gotten wins locally. And that's really where you can make such a huge difference anyways. You know what I mean? You think about it. If one libertarian gets elected to Congress, it'll be great. It'd be really cool to have that voice on the congressional floor. But what are they really going to be able to do, man? You know what I mean?
Right.
They're just going to get steamrolled everything quit they do.
Quit thinking nationally. Yeah. The libertarians have to stop thinking nationally.
Yeah, you want
to state and local. Locally. Yeah. You just had what's her name? Kate Crosby just won mayorship there in a little township in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Like that's big, man. She can do a lot for her little town.
Yeah, I went on her post and just said nullify, nullify, nullify.
Exactly, yeah. Man. Like this is awesome. Like that's a good thing. Like, stop looking at the national, stop looking nationally, because like if we've learned anything from Michael Bolden, who's one of, I just interviewed him yesterday. He's one of the greatest voices out there. Yeah. And I mean, so knowledgeable, but if we've learned anything from him, it's that the federal government doesn't have the manpower to carry out their dictates on the local level.
Sure.
If the local politics won't cooperate. So when locally, you'll nullify the federal government. They don't mean a damn thing if you can win locally. You should be focusing, all of your attention should be local. Whatever your area, region you're in, that's where all your attention should be.
Yeah, and I think we'll get a lot more state wins over the next 4 years. That's something that needs to be talked about. We finally started winning some state houses with a focused program that we call the Frontier Project, which is great. State legislator seats are huge too, because you have an opportunity. You know, we got two of them in Wyoming, right? And they've already gotten bills through over there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's a small state house. They got two libertarian legislators. The Republicans know they have to work with the libertarians now. The Democrats know they have to work with the libertarians now, or they aren't going to get a bunch of their shit passed. So it's good to focus locally and state. I think the state is really important too. And I think, you know, there's a lot of states that we have to run a gubernatorial candidate for governor, or we won't keep ballot access. So that's important.
Right.
Always know your ballot access laws if you're interested in politics at all, because every state is different. You know, New York, we got it with Larry Sharp, and then they lost it 2 years later because, you know, the next campaign they needed to do well didn't do well. And so, you know, now we'll have to put a dump a bunch of money into New York just to get an L on the ballot, just to lose all our races. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so really, yeah, the local thing, man. And that's, you know, another thing why I think the post-libertarians are cool. And, you know, I don't really, you know, it's like we're Praxians, I guess. Andrew says they like to be called Praxians. They don't like post-libertarians. Post-libertarianism gets kind of conflated with like Chris Cantwell and shit. And that's not what they're going for. They're not those type of people. So, that's why, you know, I made that comment on my old Twitter where it's like, I like the libertarians and the post-libertarians, but, you know, the Praxians. And am I allowed to do that? Because it's like there's just this constant fight. And I'm like, I like both sides, and I think they're both valuable, and I think they both have utility. And so why are we fighting with everybody? Like, shut the fuck up and let us do our job, dude.
Well, and it's not like these people, like I said, they've read Rothbard. It's not like they're stupid.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So even Pete's if
probably,
agree
Pete's probably them, read more than most libertarians.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but you can learn something from them,
right?
You know, even if you don't agree with them, you can learn something, right? You know, and I listen to a lot of people. I don't agree with on 98% of the things they talk about, but I learned something from them. Even if it's like how to avoid tyranny, you know, like I learned something. Excuse me, about their strategy or something like that. So it's like, you know, like one of the things that really drives me crazy is one of the most important things that's happening that the United States government is associated with is war,
right?
And their overseas interventionism. I don't think you could talk to anybody in that group that is being demonized and ask them about war, and they would be like, oh yeah, we should definitely go to war to spread democracy. That's not what they're going to tell you, right? Most of them are just as anti-war as us. Well, that's a very important point to be in agreement on. Let's like make coalitions where we can make coalitions. And, you know, I mean, like I don't know. How is it that agorists can slide by questioning the Libertarian Party the exact same way that these post-libertarians question the Libertarian Party or
Praxians.
free market anarchist. Yeah, we can call them Praxians. I don't care, you know, but like, how can we all have the same questions? How can we all have the same criticisms, yet agorists or free market anarchists slide by, yet these guys, they get hammered,
right?
And it's like, okay, so they're talking about different strategies. I mean, really, is anybody going to be really upset if Buck Johnson runs as a Republican and wins?
Right. Well, and the crazy thing about Buck Johnson's running for city council in Austin, right?
No, in Lockhart.
Or it's Lockhart, outside right of outside of Austin, right?
Yeah,
that's a nonpartisan race, dude.
Yeah,
he's not running as a Republican. He's just running. I mean, it's nonpartisan. You don't even put they don't put a letter next to your name on those ballots. So it's like it's even less of an argument. You know what I mean?
Right, right. But why are we mad at him?
Right,
like because he's buddy buddy with Tho Bishop and takes the Tho Bishop approach.
I'm buddy buddy with Tho Bishop too. I love that guy.
Tho Bishop's freaking amazing.
Even though every time I talk to Tho, he's like, you're too good for the Libertarian Party, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I know, but you know, I appreciate it. It's so hard for me to work with the Republicans personally because I worked with the Republicans so much in 2008 and then 2012. And I watched what they did to my boy Ron Paul. And I watched how they treat liberty-minded individuals. I watched them arrest Ron Paul delegates at the Louisiana State Convention. I watched them block them. I watched them change rules at the National Convention. It made it very hard for me to work. I mean, it made it basically 100% impossible for me to work with the GOP in the state it's in. Definitely in the George Bush era, but then the Mitt Romney era as well. It's the GOP is definitely a little different today than it was then. I think Trump really kind of shook things up for the GOP, and now there's kind of a, you know, it feels like the fight that we're having in the Libertarian Party for the soul of the party is what I like to call it. The GOP is kind of having that fight right now too. And there's a really good chance with things like y'all and people like Tho Bishop and even Austin Peterson and Thomas Massey and Rand Paul. And, you know, there's a good chance that the soul of that party gets claimed by liberty loving Republicans. And I would love to see that happen. I would.
I was just going to add on to what you're saying. Andrew Wilkow, my dad's a big fan of Andrew Wilkow, and Andrew Wilkow says that the future of the Republican Party is libertarians.
Right.
And it's like, okay, like you got a person who's engaged in the Republican Party, understands the Republican Party. He makes millions of dollars a year to talk in favor of the Republican Party.
Right.
And he's saying the future of the party is libertarianism.
And that'd be great. So, I mean, how could any libertarian be upset about that? You know what I mean? There's two different thoughts in the Libertarian Party, right? There's the libertarians like me and the Mises, the vast majority of the Mises caucus, who believe that liberty is the point. Liberty is the important part. Liberty and rolling back the size and scope of this overreaching government is the important part. And then there's another half of the party, and these are the blue-pilled libertarians who think that the party is more important. It's the party. It has to be the party. If we don't do it, then it's not worth it. You know, and these people parade themselves around trying to get into the good graces of not just the coastal elite, but the DC elite, you know, the Beltway elite. Yeah. And it's like, they are never going to like you. No matter what you do, the DC elite is, if you push for any checks and balances on their power, they are never going to like you. They will, however, patronize you sometimes. They will, however, you know, let you be their little lapdog sometimes and throw you a bone every once in a while. And that's been my problem with the Republican Party and the GOP in the past is, you know, they treat the liberty Republicans kind of like their lapdogs. Like, oh, cool, look, Rand Paul's making another filibuster on the floor. That's cute. All right, buddy, good job, 8 hours, but we're still going to go and pass this giant fucking infrastructure bill. We'll catch you later. Right. You know what I mean? And so it was like, you know, that was what made it really hard for me and then continues to make it hard for me. But if, you know, if the future of the Republican Party is libertarian, then fucking beautiful, man. I love it. It should be. You know, and if you call yourself a conservative, you know, you can't be a John McCain Republican, that's for sure. You can't be a George Bush Republican. You can't be a Mitt Romney Republican. You need to be a fucking Ron Paul Republican. If you're going to call yourself a conservative or a libertarian or a liberty Republican, you better goddamn well be a Ron Paul Republican then. You know what I mean? And so if that's what happens, then hell yeah, dude, I'm all for it. I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah. I mean, like how much would you give to see like one more Goldwater, you know, it's like,
okay. I'll settle for a McCarthy.
Exactly.
Let's see. We got five. Ryan S. Thanks for the $5 super chat, man. He said I live in a deep blue county. The grocery is tired of enforcing masks. The mall won't check vax passes. This is all coming to an end. I hope so, man. But I'm telling you, the coastal elite, I don't know if you're on the coasts, but the coastal elites are the ones that are keeping this going. I mean, we're talking New York, California, Oregon, Washington. These are the states that are keeping it going in this country. And you know, the federal government is taking all their cues on how to enforce this on the rest of the country by watching these tyrannical states, man. And I don't see them slowing down at all, man, at all.
Yeah. Where's the money?
Right.
I mean, that's another thing. Who are the big money backers behind that? That's something you also have to look at.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if these people are going to give up their paychecks. You know? So you have to make it cost them money to get them to lift this stuff. And they're not going to just lift it. I mean, you can go around and talk to your average normie and realize the propaganda has sunk in to these people.
Oh, big time,
dude. To the majority of them.
Yeah.
Like, I live in a very small town. I work for a family-owned corporation that only operates mainly in Texas. They do have some places otherwise, but not many stores outside of Texas. And they've bought in. One of the guys I work with is all he does. He's a pastor on Sundays. He's a Baptist preacher on Sundays, and he works with me during the week. And all he does is complain about Biden and Democrats and this, that, and the other. The guy has no desire to put up any resistance whatsoever.
True.
None whatsoever. And it's like, okay. Like, so if you're depending on the resistance of Republicans to save you, look how impotent the Republican Party has been for the last 100 years.
Through the whole thing, dude. Just through, especially, well, I mean, and really through this COVID thing too. I mean, you've got some decent Republicans that have done well in some states. I think Kristi Noem did pretty well when it came to COVID. I think Ron DeSantis has done pretty well when it comes to COVID. I think my own governor here in Iowa, Kim Reynolds, has done some decent things. She definitely needed to have some more teeth and bite harder. And we're kind of feeling the effects of her not going hard enough. You know, I get it too. Like, my boss at work, God bless him, he's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. He just took off. He just left after being there for a long time. But he rallied against this shit and railed against this shit for the whole 2 years I worked there. I mean, really just went to town and was like, you know, we're never going to take the shit. We can do whatever we want. Nobody's going to tell us what to put in our bodies. And then they came out with this mandate. And our company started telling people you had till December 8th. And he came in and he's like, oh, I got my first shot yesterday. I just figured I'd let you know. What the fuck, dude? You were like our barrier, bro. You were the one. You were the one that was like standing up for us. And you just went and did that? Like, that's after 2 years of rallying against this shit? What kind of fucking bullshit is that? That's, you know, still love the guy. Great guy. But man, dude, you really fucked us over.
It's a brain worm, man. Yeah. It's a brain worm. Like, they believe that once the federal government says it's mandated, that the federal government can enforce it.
Right.
These are normies. Like, they don't keep up with stuff the way you and I do. They don't realize the DEA can't enforce drug laws. They don't realize that the ATF can't enforce gun laws. They require the local law enforcement to work with them. Right. And it's the same thing. Michael Bolden wrote a blog post about Florida abandoning OSHA, right? And beautiful, one of the, at way. The very, fucking at the very beautiful. End, at the very end of the article, he writes that, hey, look, understand, they only have like 800 enforcement agents. OSHA has admitted it would take them 160 years to investigate every business that they oversee one time. Jeez. 160 years. Like, they can't enforce this if they don't have the local law enforcement on their side.
Right.
But we have so many Karens in our society willing to snitch.
Brown shirts.
And, you know.
Absolute brown shirts.
Yeah.
Medic Knight, thanks for the $10 super chat, man. Really, really cool of you. I appreciate it. He says, Josh, why won't Thomas Massey and Rand Paul just switch to the Libertarian Party? The Republicans aren't a fit for them. The Republicans are just controlled opposition. And man, I'd love to see that too. You know what I mean? Either way, I don't give a shit. And that's why, okay, so this is why, you know, I kind of get some shit in the party, but I don't give a fuck about the party, dude. Like, you know, I understand that I'm in a position where I have to care about like the day-to-day operations of the party. But at the end of the day, I only joined this fucking party because I want to see more liberty in my lifetime. And that's a totally cliche phrase. I get that. It's totally a blue pill thing to say, but I do. I want to see more liberty in my lifetime. I want to see more liberty for my children. I want to see more liberty for my grandchildren because I am a fucking grandpa at 38 years old. Thanks, kid. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. I feel you.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's really what's important to me. So, you know, yeah, it'd be great if Thomas and you know, Rand Paul and even, you know, some Senator Mike Lee and just some of these other people that, you know, are liberty forward or oriented. I would love to see him switch over to the Libertarian Party. Hell yeah, dude, that'd be great. When Amash came over, I'm not even the biggest Justin Amash fan, but when Amash flipped, you know, in his last couple of days in Congress, I was like, hell yeah, that's cool, man. We got a congressman that's a libertarian now. It was the first gold seat in Congress. And yeah, he flipped there. He didn't win as a libertarian. He didn't rerun as a libertarian. He'll probably run against Dave for president in 2024. I'm sure that's what they're planning. And he's going to be the Prag darling. But it felt good. It felt really good to see a congressman give some notice to the Libertarian Party, and especially one like him who had a picture of Rothbard in his office, you know?
Yeah, he would be like the best Prague they ever run. Oh,
dude, think? Yeah, it wouldn't even be close. I mean, come on, seriously, dude, over. He's 10 times better than Gary Johnson, probably 1,000 times better than Bill Weld, you know? So it would be pretty great. But, you know, I at this point, dude, working in the Libertarian Party for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, it's not any better, dude. It's really not. You know, we have our own controlled opposition in the party. Legit. Yeah. I'm telling you, there's people that are there to create chaos. I've seen it with my own eyes. They are not there to be libertarians or move the party forward. They're there only, whether they're from an alphabet agency or they're from one of the other parties. I've seen people in our party that were sent there to make it harder for us to succeed. I know 100%.
I believe it. I honestly believe it. I mean, they infiltrate the smallest freaking protest. What makes you think they're not going to infiltrate the third largest party in the United States?
Right. And I've seen it with my own eyes. I probably could name some on this podcast and people would be like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of fucking sense. That's all some of these people do. It's just, it's like, look, if all you're doing is creating like chaos in the party that you say that you want to help and support, probably there's a reason for that. Yeah. You know, even if you run your way all the way up to chairman of the organization, there's probably some reason for that. And your buddy Scott from the Libertarian Institute doesn't like when I say that, but Nicholas Sarwark's a Fed, man. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever.
Oh, Scott, yeah.
Scott hates when I say that. He's like, you don't even have any proof. Why would you say that? And I'm like, because, dude, I worked with the guy for 4 years. I could see it. I saw it. I could do a whole essay about it.
Yeah, I've never talked to Scott about Nick Sarwark.
He got real mad at me on my show once. one of the 3 times Scott's been on my show, he got really upset. And I was like, dude, listen, man, I love you to death, but bro, I worked with him for 4 years. Like, I watched how that man moves, and he moves like a Fed.
Yeah.
Everything he does.
I don't doubt it. I've never doubted it. I've heard it said quite a few times, and I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
And like, okay, it makes sense. Like, I don't, and this is also part of why I think one thing libertarians are missing, and Pete and I talked about this on my show a while back. We did a podcast and we titled it Return to Tradition, right? And what one of the big things we talked about was the culture that libertarians kind of avoid, that maybe they need to readopt, is bringing back the extended family,
right?
And how that camaraderie, having that cohesion within the family, that will make a big difference in your life if you are surrounded, if your little community, whether it's 5, 10, 15 people that you most closely associate with and work with on a day in, day out basis are family, as opposed to people that you just met 5 months ago.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Well, Tommy, we're getting to the end of the public stream. We'll do a members only stream here for, you know, in a minute when we get this closed down. But what do you got coming up next, man?
Well, next week we will have Andrew from Popular Liberty. We talk about the genesis and evolution of the left and government all together. And then Thad Russell. We talked about ESG. Cronyism, corporatism. Michael Bolden's coming up the week after that, where we talked about all kinds of nullification ideas and just bringing the fight to the left. And I just recorded an episode with a Twitter follower that goes by Uncle Ted.
So, oh, yeah, I know Uncle Ted.
Yep. So we just recorded that right before this stream. So, yeah, that's all coming up on year zero here in the next couple of weeks.
Nice, man. Well, I appreciate you. Where can people find you, follow you, support you, listen to you, all that great stuff?
LibertarianInstitute.org/year-0/. Make sure you put that second forward slash at the end there. Harley did something with the link, and you got to have that second one there. It's not going to go. You're not going to find me. But yeah, go to Libertarian Institute, go to podcast. You can find year zero, or you can go libertarianinstitute.org/year-0/, and you will find me.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm a big fan, and I appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for coming on. If you could just give me 5 minutes, close it out. I'll just get the members only stream started.
Will do, man.
All right, brother. Wrong way. There we go. All right, guys. Tommy's so cool, man. Go follow him. Go check out his podcast. Of course, go to libertarianinstitute.org, man, because why wouldn't you be over there? It's a great place to be, and you can find great people like Tommy and Pete Quinones and even Scott Horton, you know? So definitely a good place to be. Matt, what's up, man? Thanks for the $10 super chat, brother. Yo, what is the likelihood of DeSantis Paul? Malice for press. DeSantis listens to Dave, Angela, Amash for speaker, LP people, solid rejection of technocratic cult and communist subversion. Yuri was right. I'll address the last part of that first. Yuri was absolutely right. If you don't listen to Yuri Bezmenov, you should definitely do that right away and listen to everything he ever talked about in America, because it's happening. It's been happening. And now you can see the fruits of the communist labor coming to life, and that's what we're dealing with every day. So a likelihood of a DeSantis Paul ticket, I don't know, man. I don't think it's that likely. I really don't. I don't know. I think Trump's gonna try and come back and run and fuck it all up for DeSantis ticket, to be honest with you. I think that's what's gonna happen. But I honestly think that Trump could win in 2024 too, with how bad the Democrats are doing. So I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Guys, go check out my sponsors if you can. TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great Epstein Didn't Kill Himself hoodie that you see me wearing today by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you can join the Patreon, subscribe, star, become a member of the YouTube channel under all of my videos, where you can get into a private Discord server with a lot of really cool people, man, honestly. Get all of Top Lobster's new gear up to 2 weeks early at a 30% discount. So it really pay for itself if you're if you're getting one of the lower tiered Patreon subscribers or on YouTube. And if you do join the YouTube channel membership, please email me at joshua.breakthecycle@gmail.com and let me know so that I can get you into the Discord server. That way, you know, if my Twitter ever goes down again or something, since they took my Twitter from me, thankfully I had the backup, but if it ever goes down again and I can't get it back, I have a place to talk with you guys still. And, you know, we're working on the website and we got the email list out now too, so you can sign up for that. It's going to have a free book for you guys soon. I'm going to be working on an ebook after that as well, so you guys will get some free ebooks. And all that great stuff. Plus you get updates at least once a week about shows and all that good stuff. And Julia is the one doing a lot of that. My fiance, she's very, very smart when it comes to that stuff. So if you guys can sign up for that, I would be stoked. And of course, go check out our executive producers, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you own a business, go check them out right now, right when the show ends. Guys, I don't got the schedule together for next week. I have obviously been slacking in my duties as podcast host over the last couple weeks, ever since we went to Disney and then the COVID and, you know, the family stuff. And so I'm really trying to get back into the swing of things. And I promise you soon the show will be hitting on all cylinders again. The members only stuff, the Patreon will be all updated by the end of tomorrow. So all of the members only streams will be up over there. So if you guys want to support the show, support my family, I appreciate you guys. I really do. It makes everybody here have a much easier day. So thank you. And if you guys want to come check out the after show with Tommy, sign up on the YouTube under all my videos by hitting join, and you guys will be right there. I will see you for tomorrow's show. If I don't have a guest, I'll do a solo show tomorrow. But until then, don't forget to break the cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and refrain. But I just meant it in Minecraft. The helicopter part was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just meant it in Minecraft. What chipper is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control, because I just meant it in Minecraft. Obviously, I would never advocate force, unless it's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse in Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing I mean, you know it. The product is getting close to COVID. Holy shit, I think I'm a poet in Minecraft.